Technorama, episode 362 for December 5th, 2012. Lottery losers. Again.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Is there a special place to light the first LED of the Technorama candle?
Over there, in the media corner.
I knew that place was special for a reason.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here's your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for December 5th, 2012. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, right on cue with that music. And with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Well, as you alluded to earlier, I'm really disappointed.
Why is that?
Well,
because you didn't win your
obviously
millions.
Obviously, I'm here because I didn't win the lottery.
This is your lot in life.
Yeah, we didn't win the lottery, so we're recording tonight.
If you had won the lottery, you'd probably never podcast again.
No, I'd set up the Podcast Institute and just kind of...
Podcast Institute? What is that for?
Yeah, fun.
Old podcasters who tried for years to make money?
That's where we retire them.
Hey, no, without you, there wouldn't be any great-sounding audio, and I want to apologize for the audio issues in last week's show were had nothing to do with Craig, who is the genius audio producer that he is. They were my fault because I didn't hit record on my end. See, we normally record his end audio nice and clear, recorded on his microphone, into his mixer, into his stuff, and same thing on this end, and then he magically puts them all together. So it almost sounds like we're in the same room instead of over a Skype call, or in this case, Google Plus.
Almost sounds like we know what we're doing normally.
But every once in a while, something happens, usually involving alcohol, and someone like me forgets to hit record. So
we're having the special intervention to talk to Chuck about his drinking problem.
I'm tonight. Going dry this week. All I got is water.
Oh, yeah.
Let us move on, because we do have another full agenda on the show this week. Coming up in this episode, we have scientists discover a new use for salt, the secrets of the universe as told by children, and Luke demands DNA test from Vader as proof. None of this and more coming up right after this.
Don't have that any problem either. Technorama, it'll drive you crazy.
I'm Steve Rickyberg from Geek Cred at geekcred.net, and you're listening to Technorama.
Once again, we want to thank you for joining us if this is your first time listening. And we normally give a shout out to the chat room. We do this show live every Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern Time on Google Plus as a Google Plus Hangout. So if you happen to be around, circle. We can circle Craig Stepp, or you can circle Chuck Tomasi, or you can circle Technorama Podcast. You're going to find out one way or the other. We also announce this on Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, we're just blatantly drumming up an audience. We're pounding the pavement. We're walking around with a sandwich board out on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
15 minutes till showtime, ringing the bell.
Like a picnic, like we're picketing.
Right. We're not picketing. Don't picket.
No, we're not picketing.
We're picking and grinning.
We're the podcast 1%.
Our chat room.
The 1% is the entire audience we have.
Our chat room is the 1% of the audience that it used to be. Yeah. But we have Mew and me and Gru and Tim Elliott and Tom H. Welcome. Looks like Tom H is a new name in the chat room.
No.
And ZML2008, who is a permanent fixture in the chat room.
Yeah, he's kind of like a sconce on the wall.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Like,
you can't
like
really uninstall it unless you have to paint the whole wall up.
Right, the old style with the torch, so they leave the charcoal marks on the wall. That's what we're looking at here.
That's right.
Want to wish a very special happy birthday to... Oh, we missed a week, so we're going to make up for that. November 28th, one of my coworkers, Ben Sweetser. Happy birthday to Ben. Then we get into December, December 1st. Claudio Miranda, didn't we just announce his wedding thing?
He's trying to overrun our calendar.
At this time of year, anyway. He's going to start his own holiday pretty soon. It's like President's Day. It's just going to be Claudio Day.
Yeah.
December 2nd is Ben Frixell from the Mac Mania podcast. Oh, where's my bell? We mentioned a podcast, so we have to do
ding.
The... There we go. December 6th, Super Moon Man. I wonder if Super Moon Man still listens. He's been on the calendar.
It's like Superman, but he likes to show his moon.
Oh, no, no. Didn't need that visual.
Buns of Steel.
December 7th, Peter, a.k.a. Zipster from the Zip & Co. podcast in Weymouth, Dorset, UK. There's another one for you. December 8th, Dandy Man. December whatever, Gideon, Michael H., Gideon, we need your date on there. You forgot to put a number. We don't know if it's the 8th or the 9th, but it's somewhere smashed between Dan D-Man and Stephen Kite, a.k.a. Big
Maybe
Unit
it was
62.
Like at midnight between the 8th and 9th.
Maybe, or it's, yeah, like a leap year, a leap second.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you have a twin and one's born in one day and one's born on the other.
I don't know that for a fact. I don't know anybody that way. It must be just you.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to all you people, and apologies for getting to him a little late last week because we didn't have a show. Work intervened, and I was out of town. But if you want to be on the birthday calendar, or it's your birthday, and we wish you a happy birthday anyway if you're not on the calendar, but we can fix that for you. Actually, you can fix that for us. Go to chuckchat.com/wiki and put your name on the birthday calendar. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to see you in the Hangout on Sunday night. Let's play that beautiful bean music.
I knew you were going to say that.
How'd you know? We've been working together way, way, way too long. On this day in tech history for December 5th, 2012. It was on this date in 1492 that Christopher Columbus becomes the first European to set foot on the island of Hispaniola, which is now known as Haiti and the Dominican Republic.
And also on the same date in 1766, in London, James Christie holds his first sale.
Our first order up for auction is...
Ding!
This brand new painting by Vincent van Gogh. December 5th, 1948, in a message before the U.S. Congress, U.S. President James K. Polk confirms that, quote, large amounts of gold have been discovered in California.
And German-born Swiss physicist Albert Einstein is granted an American visa today in 1932.
When he got over here, he promptly applied for an American Express card. Flight 19 is lost in the Bermuda Triangle 67 years ago today.
And subscriber trunk dialing, what? Oh, subscriber trunk dialing STD. STD. is inaugurated on its first date in 1958 in the UK by Queen Elizabeth II when she speaks to the Lord Provost. In a call from Bristol to Edinburgh.
Lord Provost, come here. I need you.
On that same just like date, that. The Preston Bypass in the UK's first stretch of motorway opens to traffic for the first time. It's now part of the M6 and M55 motorways.
And the last of the ARPANET nodes closed today in 1969.
And the last of Sirius Internet closed last week. Happy birthday goes out on this date to you. American General George Armstrong Custer, born on this date in 1839.
And also born in this day in 1879, American airplane manufacturer Clyde Cessna.
Austrian-born film director Fritz Lang was born today in 1890.
As well as Walt Disney. He was born 111 years ago. Or wait a minute, as Bilbo would say, 111 years ago.
Yeah, 111 years. Sharing his birthday with Walt Disney on that very same day, German physicist and Nobel laureate Werner Heisenberg. We don't know whether he's here or there.
Yeah, we just kind of compensate for him.
So uncertain.
And also on the American radio personality, Dr. Dre turned 49.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for December 12th, 2012.
Bad news, fancy men.
Well, not bad news unless you don't have a whole lot of money. This is a story about a man who built a bot, which is, you know, a computer robot program, that sends him random crap from Amazon.
Oh, great.
You know, it wouldn't be so bad if it was on your wish list, but it was just some random thing. You're probably like me. You get that little excitement when the Amazon box shows up. You go, all right, it's here, it's here. Well, yeah. I'm imagining what it would be like if you didn't know what it was.
That would be kind of fun.
What if you could give Christmas gifts to yourself, but actually be surprised when you open them up? That's exactly what Darius Kazemi did when he wrote a bot that buys him random crap off Amazon. Some of that stuff's expensive. I wonder if you put a price limit or something on it.
My luck, it'd be like I would set it up, and it would end up with, you know, like in the App Store, they had that $9 million app, whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
The shiny thing.
Well, the bar exam test, you know, for lawyers to test for the bar exam is like $900 mm-hmm. bucks.
That's is that available on Amazon?
No, that's an actual app. Okay. I would have these Amazon things forward right to an eBay auction on another bot.
Just have this little ecosystem kind of going around.
He explains
virtual.
How it works on Random Shopper, a Tumblr where he chronicles his surprise shipment. This is his quote. Every time I run it, I give it a set budget. Ah, good. Good man. Say $50. It grabs a random word from the WordNIC API, then runs an Amazon search based on that word. Then it looks for every paperback book, CD, or DVD in the results list and buys the first thing that's under budget.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yes.
So it's a book. What'd you say?
Paperback book, CD, or DVD.
Well, that kind of narrows down your excitement.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to throw in some minor electronics things, too. Although, you're probably going to get some bizarre cable that you have no use for.
Sure.
Or an adult toy.
Yeesh. Yeah.
Among the two gifts he's given to himself so far are Noam Chomsky's Cartesian Linguistics. Sounds fascinating. And a CD from the random Swedish band. The whole thing seems a little frivolous, but it's nice to have hobbies. And who doesn't like presents? Yeah.
$50. I don't know. That's...
How often?
He's got to be single.
How often? Yeah.
Actually, you know what would be really cool? If you could set up a, almost like a Christmas gift list with a list of people, and you set up an app like this and just have
stuff.
It. Yeah, just done. 2 seconds, I've done my Christmas shopping.
Well, see, Donna and I have figured out that our home budget is you don't need approval if it's under 50. It might even be up to 75 now, but I missed that memo. But I can buy anything I want under $50. So this could work for me, but I'm sure after about two
or three.
How many
times can you do that?
Yeah, exactly. After two or three, I'd be on the hook.
You said $50. I did it 3 times.
Today?
Yeah.
Hacks and Strange Stories! Woohoo! First up, we want to let you know that the communicator badge from Star Trek is likely to be a reality.
Hey, as well as everything else in the Star Trek universe, right?
Well, we still haven't got transporters working, but give it
time. Oh, wait, we don't have tribbles either.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I'd have lots of slippers.
Get those suckers and just put them on.
It's coming as a Bluetooth accessory on Android and iOS devices. It's going to be, there's a number of different ways you can configure these as just a clip-on or has a lanyard for your corporate badge. Or even a pull string type lanyard for your corporate badge. And then if you want to talk, you tap it and use your Siri interface or your Android interface. Talk to the phone. Say,
Google Now.
Set it a timer for 15 minutes and it will remind you. So that's pretty cool. Although the first thing I would do is hack this thing to look like a Starfleet insignia.
You just kind of glue the thing on there.
I have one problem. They called it Com Badge. And that's the name I gave to my iPhone.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So
I'm not
name.
Sure if I'd be communicating with Combadge or Combadge. Well, it's got LEDs to blink if you're not paying attention, I guess. And it vibrates. So it's got all the features. It's kind of like if you took a Bluetooth headset, put a speaker on it, and hung it on your shirt. You're pretty much done.
Well, yeah, it's like a Bluetooth speakerphone.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty cool idea.
It is a pretty cool idea.
I'm surprised it took this long for people to figure it out.
Well, I can kind of do that now with, I got the Bluetooth headset that from LG that goes around my neck, and it has a phone button on one side, and it has the play pause and the volume on one side, and then next and all that stuff. If I hit the phone button while I'm not in a call, it comes up and wants to take commands from me. So, you know, I can say, call Chuck Tomasi, and it would. So, kind of get that function now, but this is different in the sense that it's not a Bluetooth headset you stick on your ear or something. It's just stuck on your shirt.
So, everyone can hear your calls.
Absolutely.
That's even better. I think I'll stick with my headphones for now. But this is an Indiegogo project. It says, here are some of the features outlined in the ComBadge Indiegogo project. Place and answer calls. Send and receive text messages with the text-to-speech through the ComBadge. Oh, that's kind of nice. And your phone's native voice commands such as Siri, S-Voice, or Google Now to set calendar events, reminders, get sports news, search for information, yada, yada, yada. Receive an alert from a wireless tether feature if you left your smartphone behind. That's kind of cool. So if you leave it in the restaurant or something and you start walking away, it gives you a shock. Ah, no, I was just hanging up my coat at church. Be notified of incoming calls, texts, or calendars and social media events.
Hey, the device does resemble a shock collar.
There's no price indicated on... Oh, the deal, they're good.
I think funding rate. When it comes out, it's supposed to be $100, but it said on the Indiegogo site...
75 to 80, yep.
Yeah, you can get in for 75 to 80 on the if you get in on the ground floor.
That's pretty cool.
I would consider getting one. You know what? When I was a service tech and I was out doing computer repair,
yeah,
this would be awesome. I could just answer the phone without having to stop what I'm doing, or you know, maybe you get your hands dirty so you can smack your shirt. I'm sorry, that thought just kind of fizzled when I was thinking about it. You're changing your diaper on your baby and. I got to open, you know, try to.
You know, the anyway. Ringtone would have to be, you know, like a Star Trek chirp or something.
Yeah, it would. Actually, they should actually license this. But.
And among other things people like to build, this other guy, I love how both of these start out with Guy Builds.
Guy builds
an X-ray backscatter machine in his garage and doesn't have to take his shoes off. So... when most people tackle a DIY project related to airports, it's usually some kind of over-the-top commercial airline simulator. But not Ben Krasnow. He took a decidedly different approach by building his own X-ray backscatter machine using various parts on eBay. And where do you get an X-ray emitter gun on eBay? That's what I want to know.
Maybe, maybe you can buy old machines. I would imagine that... Are they like a regulated device?
Probably not. But probably like strong lasers. You can get them if you want them. The final results aren't quite as instant as the machines deployed in the airport security across the country, though. In fact, Ben needed to use a separate digital camera to capture a long exposure image of an oscilloscope to truly see what something or someone is hiding. Did you watch this video?
No, I have not watched.
Did you see the picture of the chicken wearing a sweater?
Yeah, well, I see the picture there, yeah.
A picture of a plucked raw chicken wearing a Christmas vest with a snowman on it.
Yeah, he put on a little Christmas sweater or something.
You see that, like, number seven thing in the dark shadowy part? That's an Allen wrench. He's holding an Allen wrench inside the sweater. So,
well, it looks like, remember the old dot matrix printers? It's like it did line by line a scan of the... thing like a scanner, you know, does
a thermal fax printer.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, a quick look on eBay. There are X-ray machines. Here's one for $9,000.
Ow.
Here's one for $3,000.
Ow. Buy it now, $9,000?
Buy it now, best offer.
Ow. Those things are expensive. How much money is
this
guy?
This one's like
have?
$261.
Is
what
this
is this?
The same guy that sends him random crap from Amazon? No, it's not.
Hey, by the way, here's one on eBay that says X-ray machine, and it has like one of those little. Remember the little new gifts on the old web pages? You know,
yeah,
it's like new with a star. It says high frequency, $261. I think I smell a fish there. I don't know. But
Well, come on. You can get x-ray specs for a buck.
I did order a pair a long time ago.
Oh, dear, no. And there you have it, people. There you have it.
Actually, you may give me the secret of them to how they work?
Sure. Come on, amuse me.
Okay. Well, you know, they have the little cardboard that looks like an eye. Yes. You know, like a, you know, a fake eye on the lens. Well, there's the little hole that you look through.
Like the hypnosis things.
Yeah, there's a little... Well, there's a little tiny hole that you look through, and in that hole is thread, a bunch of threads, all
right? Right.
So when you look at something, and then you put your hand out, it just, it messes with your vision. It makes it look like your finger's thinner, so it looks like a bone.
Very nice.
Yeah, so it's really an illusion more than anything.
Of course it's an illusion. Sorely disappointed. You honestly think it was an x-ray spec?
When I was 8, 9, yeah.
And are you teaching Harrison to avoid scams like this?
No.
Let's order learn it, Harrison. Gotta learn hard lessons, man. He's encouraging.
Hey, he's got to learn the hard lessons, right?
With his own money, I hope.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. I got to rethink that then. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. This music just goes so well with this slide that we got. If you can, put that on the screen. This is from the 1936 Los Angeles Electrical Exposition, where women dressed up as appliances. Because electrical appliances were all the rage in 1936. We have Iron Woman. Yes, dressed up like an electrical iron.
The sequel to Iron Man.
We have Clock Lady, Vacuum Girl. And I thought the other lady in the front was like an end table, but she's actually a stove.
Wait a minute. This is the female Justice League.
Appliance. Ooh, how sexist of you, Craig. I can't believe you went there. I like the light bulb with legs.
Hey, look. They're the ones that dressed up the lady as a stove and a vacuum.
The stove kind of reminded me of a Halloween costume my sister did years ago. She dressed up as an end table. And had a, you know, just her head sticking out. There was a lamp and a book, and she said, "I'm a one night stand."
Oh,
ba-doom, tsh.
Oh boy, there goes that Tomasi humor.
The one I can't figure out. There's two of them. There's a lady in the back. She looks like a bowl of grapes. And there's another lady.
She's a washing machine.
That's a washing machine.
I think those are bubbles.
Oh, okay. What's with the lady that looks like a laser jet fuser roller?
She looks like, actually, I thought she looked like a fluorescent light ballast.
Electric current? I don't know. Hair curlers?
Yeah, I like there's one woman also that's a mixer, like a juicer. I'm sorry.
Where?
It's like a silver juicer, orange juicer.
That's like a coffee pot, dude.
Oh, coffee. Oh, like a percolator. Yeah.
And lamp lady in the back. Yes, that's the appliances from the 1936 Los Angeles Electrical Exposition.
Hey, the lady in the vacuum cleaner, they just barely wrap the bag around her backside. That's
that's an Electrolux. They haven't changed much.
No, I have not.
And if you take it even further back, a little bit further to the 20s, there were certain businesses that tried to trick shoppers by putting fake television sets in their windows.
Oh,
long
my God.
Before
it's
the
like
days
a big scandal.
Of software demos that didn't really work.
Yeah, it was vaporware.
This is vaporware.
Back in the 20s.
Although television sets wouldn't be mass-produced in the United States until after World War II, by the 1920s, many Americans were already captivated by the idea of moving pictures broadcast into their homes. To capitalize on the interest of this not-quite-ready-for-prime-time, a.k.a. vaporware technology, some stores would actually set up fake television sets to lure shoppers to their windows. Matt Novak of Paleo Future details a couple of methods for creating fake television displays from the August 1926 issue of Science and Invention magazine.
Science and Invention.
In the example above, the pre-recorded film strip is broadcast against a screen in one section of the window, showing an actress making various movements and expressions. Sorry, I had to see that on the webcam. The actress herself sits in another part of the window, trying to mimic her pre-recorded movements as best she can while seated in front of a fake camera. Actually, a lamp-lit funnel.
Hey, I think this is how Steve Jobs demonstrated the first FaceTime. He had somebody behind the...
behind the screen.
Hey, how's it going? Look, I'm live.
I'm great, Steve. Where are you?
I can't hear
you. You can hear him echoing from behind the screen.
Yeah. FaceTime demonstrated.
FaceTime, 1920. Yes, there it is.
Phony. I like how they're phony radio set. That's funny.
Phony camera. Phony everything else. And if you go a little forward up to, early 1950s, we have...
Hey, by the way, this time travel's really hurting my back.
It's all over the place. Luckily, we have the TARDIS fridge that we didn't put in here.
Yeah.
We find that a 61-year-old computer springs back to life. The witch is back. Wasn't that an Elton John song? I'm a witch, and the witch is back.
Wasn't witch, but yes.
Okay, we won't say that other word on this podcast often.
Yes.
Of course.
Female dog. The female dog is back.
If you're a computer historian, you already know that witch refers to the Wolverhampton Instrument for Teaching Computation from Harwell. Someone just really tried for that, didn't they? That was.
I can see that they took their knack for acronyms all the way from the 60s through the 80s.
If not, here's the story. The 2.5-ton machine, first constructed in the 1950s as part of an atomic research program, became the world's oldest original working digital computer.
Wow.
After a museum in the UK restored it and then rebooted it on Tuesday, unlike today's nearly mute devices, the massive computer clicks, clacks, and flashes like something out of an old sci-fi movie. Well, it was out of an old sci-fi movie. Quote, in 1951, the Harwell Decatron, the other less amazing name for the witch, because they had to call it something fast shorter, was one of perhaps a dozen computers in the world, and since then has led a charmed life surviving intact.
Wow.
While its contemporaries were recycled or destroyed. Kevin Merle, a trustee at the UK's National Museum of Computing, said in a news release, the computer outlived its usefulness in atomic research by 1957 and was used as a teaching device until 1973. I'll bet the students loved that.
Yeah.
It was on display briefly before being dismantled, the museum says, and then was rediscovered by volunteers in a museum in 2008 or 2009.
Wow.
Computer couldn't tell. Big long article here that's really fascinating to read that I am... frankly shocked, stunned, surprised, and relieved that they've pulled this out of archives and got it working again.
You know what's amazing to me is, you know, how something this big can be put away and not noticed for 40 years, something like that.
We were using it as a heating system.
We thought it was part of the air conditioning.
It glowed, so we warmed our sandwiches.
Hey, I wonder, it says that was the Harwell Decatron. I wonder if that has something to do with, like a decahedron.
It's D-E-K-A. I think it has something to do with the Transformers myself, but.
Oh, okay. Well, it just sounds like it was, like a 10-sided die. Yeah. Decahedron. We need to go back to Optimus.
Is Decatron one of the good guys or the bad guys?
Yeah, he's actually
Megatron's bad brother. He can't transform into anything.
Yeah.
We are going to take...
I'm sorry, I just sunk in when you said...
I can transform into a Babbage machine, but that's not very helpful. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with a What the Chuck, and then we're going to have a... user-inspired discussion to take us out to the end of the show. We'll be right back.
These are 101 unsigned integer. Technorama, 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 Technorama. Technorama, Chuck and Craig,
Technorama, to Technorama, you make me be sedated. To Technorama, to Technorama, he's Technorama, 101-101-101.
This is Adam Savage from Mythbusters, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
What the Chuck? What's up with that?
Hey, in what the Chuck? You know, we love Legos, but there's a even we have a point where we're not going to buy Legos because they're too expensive. I thought some of the, you know, Star Wars kits and things were a little pricey, but this one clearly takes the gold. You know, funny
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Because this one's made out of 14 karat solid gold Lego brick. This is
holy. Wow.
Yeah, this is the 2x4 brick in a display box. Ooh. This brick is 25.65 grams of 14 karat gold. Sounds like Christie's auction. The brick is the same size and shape as the original 2.4 Lego brick, so you can slip it into your kids' toys, or your kids will take this and use it in their assemblies.
Is it compatible? I guess so.
Oh, it's currently out of stock. Darn it. Because it's all for the low, low price of $14,500.
Wow. Out of stock. How many did they have? I wonder.
One? I don't know.
Yeah, that would be pretty bad. Like you come home and, honey, where my gold brick go? And your kid builds like the biggest Lego thing he's ever created, and he's proud of it. And your brick's like somewhere in the middle.
This is listen how you could have gotten one of these if you devoted half of your career to it.
Yeah,
this incredibly rare piece was given to Lego employees that had 25 years of employment at the Hohenwestedt, I think I said that right, German factory, and was also given to a couple of very special business partners of Lego of the time. It was only given out from about 1979 to 1981. Only one or two per year, from my understanding. This amazing brick comes in its original display box, which features the Lego logo of the time. It has changed, hasn't it?
It has changed a little bit, slightly.
As it was given out. The box itself is plastic and has a minor amount of storage wear on it.
Who cares?
Yeah, I'll sacrifice the box. But it's gone. Oh.
That's pretty cool, though.
Some kid bought it with his app that he didn't pay for on his dad's phone. I'm buying it.
No, it was probably that automatic Amazon. Brought again.
He didn't type $50. I didn't wear this. He typed $50,000. I am going to click on add to my want list anyway.
Yeah.
You know
what?
Hey, you need to have an account on brickenvy.com.
Wait a minute. I'm going to stick this on my Amazon wish list.
It's not on Amazon.
It doesn't matter. You can add any link to your wish list.
That's true.
I just did.
I think I'm just happy enough that it's in Evernote. Which brings us to a couple of things. Ben Vaughn had written us, and he said, I really enjoyed the interview with Ernie Klein, who did Ready Player One. We did that audio interview with him a few weeks ago, and said, you guys should do a book review every once in a while, maybe once a month, talk about what you're reading and whatnot. I said, you know, that's not a bad idea. We have this thing called the Geek Library that's highly underutilized on our show that we could talk about. So to kick this off, I want to just throw out a few books that I've been reading the last couple of months. This is the first one. I am not a voracious reader by any means. In fact, most of my books are consumed as audiobooks while I'm on travel. So Craig had steered me to one called the Evernote Bible, which has been very instrumental. We're going to talk a little bit about Evernote in just a sec. But that was a very short read and happened to be free as a Kindle book. What was that? A couple of weeks ago? And
last week.
Probably,
a couple weeks.
I skipped over a lot of the fundamentals, like this is a notebook, this is a tag, this is a note. I went, yeah, get to the good stuff. And it was more of how can you use tags effectively and things. So we'll get to that in a minute. But very informative, very handy. And it also had this list of 99 good ideas to get you thinking about Evernote in ways other than just a note-taking application, which is largely how I thought of it until about 2 weeks ago. Now I am wholesalely invested in it and have decreased my Dropbox storage in half because it's just been such a wonderful repository of data and metadata.
Yeah.
The other one, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I'll talk about it a little bit in a minute.
The other one I read recently, or again, I correct that and say I've listened to, is called The Brilliant Disaster by Jim Ressenberger, which is a story about the Bay of Pigs invasion that you know, Kennedy launched in 1961 and against Castro, because Castro had just come into power, and then he was starting to friend up with the communists and the Soviet Union, and we wanted to launch an invasion, but it was just problem after problem after problem, and everybody knows how it ended. If you don't, go do your history. But very good insight, and Jim Ressenberger is one of the sons of one of the higher people involved in that whole debacle. So I found that very interesting. Unfortunately, the way I read it was, it's in two parts, like a lot of audiobooks are. Chapter 16 through 31, and then I listened to the first part. So I picked up right at the point where they were launching the invasion, and then I went back and got all the backstory, which was an interesting way of doing it, but certainly unconventional, but still entertaining and enjoying and educational. And then the third one of recent interest has been Red Shirts by John Scalzi. And as you can guess from the name, it has to do with Star Trek, but it's not set in the Star Trek universe. It's a fiction book about that type of situation where all the rookies always seem to end up dying on this. Well, I can't remember the ship name, but this, like Ready Player One, was also narrated by Will Wheaton on Audible.com. Ding. Which,
yeah, there you go.
I am a member, and that's how I consume a lot of my books. And I thought he did a brilliant job in both Ready Player One and Red Shirts. So it's just a fun fiction book. We'd like to talk to John at some point if Craig has the interest of reading that book, and we'll do that someday. So
yeah, actually, the Red Shirts was the next thing on my list, but Emma. And my mom gave me two books, and I'm not sure the titles, but they're kind of tech-related, so I'm trying to remember what they were right now, but I'll talk about them next week, at least something.
Okay.
I'll have something next week.
And speaking of Evernote, I mentioned the Evernote Bible. I had been using it for about 2.5 years, really since I started my last job. I saw somebody using it and knew about it, but I didn't really start using it. I am continually amazed at how advanced yet simple that program is to start using, and yet the advanced features it's got in it. You can put in search terms, kind of like Gmail or Google, where you can say tag colon something or minus tag.
Like created something.
Yeah, created in the title. You can search for specific text, either in the title or in the body of the message. It will do OCR. That one blew me away. In the summer of 2011, we were making notes on paper of a process that we wanted to do. And this girl took a picture with a camera, mailed it to me. I put it in Evernote. And then I was doing a search later. And I said, show me something on change management or whatever it was, or incident number. And it found the text in her handwriting in that picture. And I went,
now that's pretty good.
Whoa, that's powerful, cool stuff. So,
yeah.
I mean, Evernote is more than just note-taking, making bullet lists. I mean, it's great for making lists. I use a lot of those. But as I discovered more uses out of that Evernote Bible, I started importing a lot of files and putting metadata with them. What was the other one? Oh, I found an old PST from my former job. You know, the Microsoft Outlook storage files. This one was full of notes. Not full of mail, but full of notes that I've been keeping over the years. And
I don't have
the ability to open it, so Donna was kind enough to loan me her work machine for a morning, and I extracted all the notes out of there. It has everything from Mark Horseman's kids to recipes how to make gnocchi. It has song lyrics and things that I totally forgot about. So now all of that is in Evernote. And I mean, it's liberating to have all this information. Unfortunately, when I was in Dallas and was doing some of these imports, I ran out of space very quickly because on the free account, you get 60 meg a month of upload, which again, if you're just doing a few pictures here and there and taking text notes, you're not going to run out. Free is great. Free worked for me for over 2 years. When I started...
Yeah, it's actually very full functional until you start adding a bunch of files to the thing.
Right, right. And it'll do a little better and quicker OCR. You get better technical support, too, if you're a premium member, which is $5 a month or $45 a year. So I said, you know what? I've been using this for 2.5 years. I felt guilty not paying for it by this point. So I broke down and got the subscription, and then I get a gig of storage a month, which I am happily using away. Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you what for me... I'll echo a lot of the same things that you're talking about with Evernote. It's very flexible because the search is so good, and that's what makes it really powerful. The other thing I really like as far as the Evernote being a company and as a startup is that they have the eye on the long term. And they Phil Libin is big on talking about making Evernote the 100-year company. So I get the feeling that they're forward looking where. I don't think they're going to just sell to Google or something in the next week. You know, they've got a long-term thing. So I feel like my data is going to be there for a long term. And that's the kind of feeling I'm sure they're looking for to instill in their users is, security and longevity. And for me, they've done that, but I've been really happy with them. The system's really open. Like we were talking about making a template. And the template is an XML file. You just, just edit it up and you can import it and, doctor it up, whatever.
This can be consumed in a lot of different ways. The data resides in the cloud, but you've got local application either on your iOS device, on your Android device, on your Mac OS, on your Windows. There's a local application that you can use to manage and manipulate and sync this information, if you will. And that's another thing that a premium membership will get you. Is the ability to load on your iOS or Android devices, load those notes locally so you can use them offline. I can do that on my laptop with a standard account, but you can't do that on the portable ones unless you get the premium membership. Yeah. So it's very flexible and very powerful. I'll be on a trip and they give you that luggage tag, I mean, I'm just starting to think of everything that I can put into Evernote I possibly do. I rip off the pink tag on Delta Airlines and I take a picture of the tag going, what if they lose my luggage and I lose my tag? Okay, that's not a good situation. So I'll take a picture of the tag with my phone. It gets into Evernote. Now I've got it. Do I care that it's taken up a few bytes in 6 months? I put the flight number on. This is DL5418. So well,
after your flight's over, you can delete it. But
Right. And then I'll tag it with that. With the trip or the customer name or something so that I can find it later. So should the worst happen that I lose that piece of paper, I've even gone to taking pictures of a lot of the items in my wallet, insurance cards. If your wallet's stolen on a trip, it's a really bad time. Trust me, I've been there. Some of you listeners from 2007 know that. And had I had pictures of a lot of that stuff, it would have been a lot less worse time. I mean, I would have had the credit card information instantly that I could have called and canceled. A lot of that is just great. And you can, speaking of privacy, you can encrypt information in a specific note. So if you want, it can be your password database. Just highlight the text, say encrypt it, and give it a passphrase. And then when you want to see it later, you give the passphrase and it's decrypted. And that's stored in the cloud, encrypted. They are working on a way to make it more distributable for businesses and easier to manage. So you could take your personal account and start subscribing to business notebooks and they can maintain those. So I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes in the corporate world too. Because I think this is a very powerful tool.
It is very powerful. I've been very happy with it. And I'm just like you. I'm like, wow, what else can I put in? And I was telling you the other day that I would... go into a conference room like at work if I'm going for a meeting. I'll just grab the notepad off the credenza, make notes on it. I'll take a picture of it and throw my notes away. They're there. Yep. They'll be at my desk when I get there. And so why not? I can see the picture and go, okay, yeah, it looks good. And But again,
yeah, just any idea. Somebody tells you, you know, hey, there's a good book to read. We just rattled off three or four of them tonight. You know, write them down, throw them into your, you know, to read list, or tag them as Amazon. So the next time you're on Amazon, you can go and look at, what was that thing Chuck and Craig mentioned?
Oh, it was garbage anyway.
and the API is really easy because there's all kinds of things that tie into it. There's a Chrome or Firefox extension called Web Clipper. So as you're browsing a page, you can just clip it and it throws it into Evernote automatically.
Mm-hmm.
There's now one for iOS called EverClip. So anything you copy on the phone gets put in this EverClip application, and then you can review it and say, send this one, don't send that one, to Evernote directly. So you get the similar kind of functionality anywhere on my iPhone. I can just go, hey, copy this. And it goes, ding. Yeah. That means that it's gotten into EverClip, and then I can review my clips and stick it into Evernote.
Yeah, if I wish. I can do the same thing in Android. You know, if I'm on a web page, I can share it, and it shows me Ellipse apps, and I just pick Evernote.
We have nothing to do with the company. We are just satisfied fans, customers, and happy to share what we know. And getting back to the books real quick, if you've got a book or something you recommend, or let us know, send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. And hey, we're not, it could be sciencey, it could be biography, it could be historical, it could be, you know, we're
all of the above.
We're only doing 50 Shades of Grey if you send us the RGB hex values for those 50 Shades of Grey. CC, 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 DD, DD, DD. Sorry.
What?
That's only funny to web developers.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. Anyway.
It was funny about 10 years ago. I'm just kidding.
Oh, ba-doom. And with that bad humor, that takes us to the end of the show. We appreciate you listening thus far and putting up with our bad humor and whatever else we put up with. Again, let us know if you've got books you want to tell us about, both audio and hard copy and otherwise, or movies or whatever. Call the listener line, 206-222-CHAT, 206-222-2428. Or as I said earlier, send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, all that stuff. You can find out more at our website at chuckchat.com/technorama. It's all there. Wow. Decompress, right? We're at the end.
The pressure's off.
Not quite yet. We got to finish up with our standard outfare. That almost sounds like something you'd go to and pay money for rides, right? Welcome to outfare.
Yeah, right.
Special thanks to Mad Mar for providing all the great blog content during the week. We appreciate that. Keep your eye on our blog at chuckchat.com/technorama or the Facebook page, Technorama. We'll get you stuff there. It's fun. It's cool. It's interesting. And thank you to Ben and Alan and all the other guys who sent us links during the week. We know we get a lot of that stuff and we want to incorporate that. Sorry we can't get it all in every week. Thank you for downloading and listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, give me a big old binary high five.
101. Something like I'm transforming.
Ended on a high note. Here we go.
Yeah.
Runner, follow the corridor with the pipes overhead. The way is always down.